It's time for Caffeinated Comics, a lively discussion and debate on comics, film, television, and collectibles, all fueled by the magic of Frappuccinos. Caffeinated Comics is sponsored by Chimera's Comics. Chimera's is your one stop for comic books, graphic novels, hero clicks, Magic the Gathering, and more. Explore the fantastic at Chimera's Comics. And now, here's your hosts, John and Steven.
Thank you. This is Caffeinated Comics. I'm your host, John Clark. We've got another Skype cast for you today. You guys might remember a few months ago we talked to Houston Huddleston. He was restoring the Enterprise D bridge from the Next Generation and trying to create a museum out of it. Well, he's got pretty far with the bridge. He's toured all over the United States through sci-fi conventions, and he's decided to go ahead with the museum. He started a Kickstarter for the Sci-Fi Museum, and it's gone way beyond Star Trek. So it sounded really interesting, and I wanted to get his perspective on it. So I'm going to just let the call go.
We came to a standpoint where, or standoff, where we couldn't go any further with what we had. We never had enough money to restore the bridge. We made $68,000 through Kickstarter, and you know, they take 10% of that, and then we made a little bit through Indiegogo, but that was still, you know, roughly 70 whatever grand, and we needed 250 grand to restore the bridge.
Wow.
Because the bridge itself was a $600,000, you know, price thing back in the late 90s. This is not an easy set to build. It's not like the original series bridge where it doesn't have a ceiling and it's all wood and all this. Yeah. These are huge fiberglass pieces that need to be sculpted and molded and all that. And yeah, we've got 90-something percent of the bridge, but still, it was outside for 5 years and there was no floor and there was nothing to hold it all together, not to mention the projector, not to mention that we want to make it touchscreen computers for an interactive experience, all this stuff. And so we were at a point where if we stayed stagnant, we'd go backwards, you know? Mm-hmm. And so we all discussed it, meaning me and the board members and, you know, the other voices in my head. and, you know, our board members are all the original people from Star Trek, Ronald D. Moore, who wrote and directed that, and Battlestar Galactica, Helix, and all this stuff. Rick Sternbach, who designed the tricorder and pretty much every detail seen in Star Trek Next Gen and Voyager. Andrew Probert, who designed the ship of the Enterprise for the motion picture, the refit, as well as the D. Tim Earls, who designed Firefly, David Gerald, who designed, who created the Tribbles. I mean, it just goes on and on and on. Doug Drexler. And these aren't dummies, you know. these are really brilliant people who agreed with me that this was the only logical choice that we had to make, which was to create our own museum. And there's a man named Herman Zimmerman, who was set designer. He was the first one to say to me, well, it's not just going to be Star Trek, is it? And I said, no, it probably won't, because there are all these amazing other sci-fi props from Battlestar Galactica and Buck Rogers and Star Wars and, Firefly and Stargate and all the rest, Babylon 5, that there's no place for other than every now and then the EMP Museum in Seattle will do special exhibits with their permanent sci-fi exhibits.
Yeah, and but I've noticed with the EMP, the last time I was there, I've been there about three or four times, mm-hmm. and they've combined – it used to be segregated, the EMP, the Experience Music Project, and their Sci-Fi Hall of Fame. And now they're so mixed together, it seems they have less floor space for sci-fi than they used to.
Yeah, that's true. I'm friends with them, and we're trying to work out something – some sort of – partnership or something that we can it will be copacetic, it will be some sort of synergy that they'll be where they are, we'll be where we are, and that we'd be able to trade off exhibits and do. And again, the museum that we're building is not a standard thing, museum of static props that are just behind glass and that's it. We're going by what we have, which is the Enterprise D set and the original series set. And we are going to make them so you can sit in them and play with them. And with the Enterprise D, you can actually fly missions eventually and do programming and learn about everything from astrophysics to biology, geology, etc. So that's our whole basis for the entire museum. Everything that we're going to have in it will be touchable and play-withable and learn. You learn real science through science fiction. That's mm-hmm. that's the basis of our museum, and we're calling it the Hollywood Science Fiction Museum.
Now, the original bridge, you say, which will stand next to the D bridge, are you building that from scratch, or did you find a recreation somewhere?
No, we got that, or I found it. I hate to take all the credit myself on certain things. This, I'll admit, I found it in the dumpster. When we rescued the Enterprise D, and
there was an original bridge next to the D.
Yeah, it was used for tour, as was the Enterprise D. They built it in the late 90s, I think, and they brought it to Germany, and they brought it to England, and then they brought it, I think, Singapore or something like that, and then they brought it back to America, and it sat outside for 5 years, and it just got, you know, destroyed and damaged. The pieces I have, though, from the TOS bridge were all – there's some wood pieces, but most of it are the plastic pieces that were pretty damn durable, like the Red Alert panels and the plastic panels with all the buttons on it, you know, the candy glass. Some of them are ice dispensers that they molded, you know, mm-hmm. from the original series. So, yeah, it's it, – we got that. We got the D bridge, and we're also going to have the NX-01 bridge from Enterprise. And that one was the screen used one, because this crazy brilliant man, his name's Martin Netter, and he did what I did. He came, but he had more money to do it. He purchased everything from the NX-01 bridge when it went up for auction, so he has the entire bridge.
I remember that auction.
Mm-hmm. All he needs to do is have the space to put it all back together. And so that's what we're supplying. And we're going to do it by the end of 2015, we'll have it all done.
Now, do you have a space in mind?
I've got two spaces in mind. One is near Hollywood Highland, and the other is Hollywood – I mean, not Hollywood. Hollywood and Highland, and the other is Sunset and Vine. And they're both near big theaters that have a lot of premieres. And that's something I had in mind, because Hollywood, they don't want to leave from home very much. Mm-hmm. So if they have a premiere at the Cinerama Dome or Grauman's Chinese or the El Capitan, they can walk down the street, across the street, next door, whatever it is, to our museum, where we will have a temporary display of the props from that movie, plus the art from that. That will be in our temp exhibit room. And then they go in our museum to the restaurant that we're going to have, which is going to be a spaceship-themed restaurant, and have the after party and get cocktails and get drunk out of their minds. So yeah, it's perfect. It's the absolutely perfect thing for sci-fi, fantasy, anything, you know, that will be cool like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it's copacetic with Hollywood, you know.
That's a great idea. I used to live next to the Museum of the Moving Image, and down the block from there was a huge multiplex.
Yes. Wasn't that in London, right?
No, in Queens, in New York.
Ah, right. Okay. Yeah. Because I heard there was something similar like that in London, and it closed.
Ah, that's too bad. I know the one in New York is still open, and in fact, they are just down the street from Kaplan Astoria Studios, where they still make Sesame Street.
Wow.
So there was a whole little neighborhood, and I only lived a couple of miles away. And when my first son was born, we watched Sesame Street together, and I go, well, I should get a running job there, and then I could ride my bike.
Yeah. I met Carol Spinney. Mm. Who plays Big Bird and Oscar the Grouch. And I told him about what we're doing. This was like last year, late last year. He was floored. He was absolutely, he said Big Bird almost was on one of the shuttles that went up.
Really?
Yeah. And I said, the same thing. I didn't know that. He said, well, you didn't know that because it was never in the news. And Big Bird was supposed to be on the Challenger.
Really?
Yeah. And the reason it wasn't is because they couldn't get Big Bird the costume. Oh, I'm sorry for those who didn't know it was a costume, but they couldn't get Big Bird inside the door, inside the cockpit for the so-and-so. That's the only reason. And my wow. God. And when that didn't work out, that's when they got the female teacher. I can't remember her name.
Yeah, but, Christine McAuliffe.
Christine McAuliffe.
Yeah.
And that's a shocking piece of history. And can you imagine having to explain that to the children, you know, after that?
Yeah. Yeah. I remember I was in the eighth grade when that happened. And in my school, one of the jobs, we didn't have a cafeteria, so the kids ate in the classroom. So the eighth mm-hmm. grader's job were to watch the younger students. And we would watch the fifth grade. And it was in the middle of that lunch that they came in and made the announcement.
Wow.
Yeah.
Man. Yeah. I remember what I was in, but it was very, very shocking. We could leave it. It's like 9/11. You know what? Someone called me when that happened, and I said, "Wait, what?" And I remember they just woke me up. And mm-hmm. this the same thing with the Challenger. And I visited NASA recently, last couple of months, because of the museum, of course. And I had this big meeting with all of these top guys there. I was so intimidated. But one of the things they did was they showed me. One of the space shuttles, the interiors of the space shuttles that they don't, of course, fly anymore. And the person I was with asked about the Challenger, and then he kept like asking more questions. And I turned to him, I said, "Are you out of your mind?" And he says, "Well, no, they, you know, she wasn't there when that happened. It doesn't matter, you know. That's ask a Jewish person about the Holocaust, you know. I mean."
Right.
Really, it's
there's no statute of limitations on that.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's never going to be funny.
Yeah.
That's never there is going to be no okay, enough time has passed and you don't go to NASA and talk about the deaths that they had. You know.
Yeah.
That's common sense. But anyway, yeah.
But speaking of Big Bird, something I was wondering is what is your definition of sci-fi for this museum, because as you said, you met Carol Spinney. Mm-hmm. If it turned out that he had Muppets, would they belong in the museum?
Only if it was Grover in his Super Grover outfit. That's
So the Dark Crystal would be out.
Yeah. No, I'll tell you. We want, and I want this to be sci-fi and fantasy. Just because it's called the Science Fiction Museum, people. You know, it's like somebody said, you can't have Star Wars because that's not sci-fi, that's mm-hmm. sci-fantasy. You know, it's like, all right. After we don't include Star Wars, how many people do you think are going to have me on their hit list? And, you know, how many Lucasfilm fans are we going to completely piss off? So, you know, it's just that's ridiculous. Let's put in whatever we can that I have no problem. Okay, Peter Jackson, I've been talking to. Mm-hmm. I'll just say that. If he came to me and said, I want to include the Lord of the Rings, I want to build a Hobbit furrow, you know, in the back of the museum and have the so-and-so, I'm going to say, nah. I mean,
when did the Hobbits go into space?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly, right. I think it was Mark Scott Zikri who wrote the Twilight Zone book,
yeah.
I think he said to me that sci-fi was just science fiction with after a few years and a little bit of what do you call it? Not astrology, chemistry, but yeah, something like that. It's shoot, man. Here's how I see it. You'll offend more people if you don't have stuff like that in it than you will the people who raise an eyebrow and say, Herbie shouldn't be in the Hall of Cars. you know, the Munster's coach shouldn't be in the Hall of Cars because that's not sci-fi. Okay, well, how many people are you going to have pleasure, if, you know, from sitting in the Munster's coach or Herbie? Mm-hmm. You know, so yeah, screw those, you know, the naysayers. I'd say let's put in this whatever we can fit in there and whatever will make people happy. And then they'll still be learning. They'll still be learning from it. You'll still learn about filmmaking. You'll still learn about who made them. So, yeah, it's all gravy to me. I just say let's get the thing open. Let's make people happy and go from there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because sci-fi is more broad than ever, I think. When we were growing up in the 70s and 80s, there were so many movies just simply about space, and that was kind of sci-fi. But yeah. I mean, now superheroes are the major genre, and you can say that's sci-fi because no one has these powers.
Exactly, and X-Men, totally science fiction.
Mm-hmm.
Totally sci-fi. I don't care what they call it, comic book movies or, you know, come on. Superman is an alien from a planet, Krypton, so that's sci-fi. So, yeah, the crazy distinctions, I'm not going to go nitpicking. Let's just put it in there. If it's available, let's do it. And, you know, like that.
Now, I've been seeing some really beautiful designs for the museum.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm assuming those are all computer simulations?
The concept art, you mean?
Yeah. Yeah, a lot of the pictures you've been putting on your Facebook page.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And I have this brilliant guy who works – he's done a lot of Star Trek work, actually, legitimate Star Trek work. And he came to me saying, I want to help. And that's what he's been doing. He's been creating this just insanely beautiful concept art for us so we can go to the big companies and get more money to make this thing. And it's like the one – The prize one, my favorite one of the Enterprise right next to the Millennium Falcon.
I love that.
That's for our 2018-2019 museum. That wouldn't be for the next year museum, obviously. That by itself would cost way too much. Mm-hmm. But that's our goal. That's what we want to do. So, yeah, but the Hall of Cars and the Hall of Robots, a lot of that can be accomplished in our 2015 museum. It depends on the room. It depends on the space that we have. But we'll just shove as much in as we possibly can and make it as cool as humanly possible.
Well, how different are those two spaces that you're talking about? Would they radically impact how you lay out the museum?
Massively different. The 2015 museum will be probably around 20,000 square feet, 20,000 to 30,000. That's roughly the size of the Hollywood Wax Museum or the Ripley's Believe It or Not Museum, those sort of things. Our mega complex, the 2018-2019 Museum, will be a three-story – it'll be a Disneyland for sci-fi fans. But, of course, Disneyland's becoming a Disneyland for sci-fi fans now. But still, it will be – it'll be on comparable to, say, the – to any huge museum like the – the new Discovery Center that won't be open for a couple of years, or the Science Center in California, which are these massive three-story mega complexes. Plus, we'll have our own theater by that point, too. It'll be a 1,000-seat or so theater that the studios can have the premieres in our theater, mm-hmm. and then just step into the lobby and see their props. So they don't have to walk down the street. So we make it even easier for studio people and actors who don't want to leave home. You know, it's perfect. So yeah,
yeah. That's great. Once you have a theater, then you can have panel discussions.
Oh, definitely. Oh my gosh, you should see the lineup that we have for. We don't talk about it in the Kickstarter and all that, but it's in our prospectus. We go through just infinitum detail on what we want this theater to be. Gates McFadden, who played Dr. Crusher in Next Generation, is a sweetheart of a person. I love her just dearly. And she's a hell of a director and theater director. And I've seen plays that she's done, one Brent Spiner was in and all this. And I told her, I said, first thing we're going to do, I want you to be our theater director once we open this theater. And she said, okay, what are you talking about? I said, I explained it to her that I want to have live plays in this thing and not just movies.
Hmm.
I want to have sci-fi actors perform on stage and not just some apocalyptic boring, I'm sorry, thing that just everybody dies at the end. I want to have Nathan Fillion and Hugh Jackman in a musical, The Music Man, because they are name me one sci-fi person who wouldn't go see that, you know?
Right.
Or Dr. Horrible's Internet Blog, perform that live, you know? Mm. You tell me what sci-fi fans wouldn't kill to see that. So, you know, yeah.
Yeah, and that's the great thing about a lot of sci-fi actors, since it's usually so big, they're either coming from Broadway or Shakespeare in the case of, say, Ian McKellen or Patrick Stewart.
Or Dave Warner. Sir Pat himself. Exactly.
Exactly.
Right. Dave Warner, right.
Or you have them coming from comedy, like Nathan Fillion or a lot of Whedon's guys. So those are people that can fill a room live.
Oh, yeah. You could fill 1,000 seats for that one, you know, and it's a one-night-only thing or something. Or even if it's half that, you know, 500 people, whatever. But, yeah, I love that idea. And I've been wanting to do a music event in town, and it just costs so much money to rent a theater. And I just said, well, let's just start our own, you know, once we open our another thing. Studios have 500-seat theaters within their studios. You name it. Paramount, go down the list. Very rarely do they have a 1,000-seat theater, and also very rarely do they have the room to display the props and, you know, do everything that we want to do with this. And, you know, so this will solve that problem for them. I think Paramount's the only one that has – I don't know how many seats their main theater is, but I know Sony doesn't have it. I know Warner doesn't have a 1,000-seat theater.
Really?
So, no.
You know, you figure Paramount and Warner's, they've been on that lot so long, you'd figure they'd have these facilities left over from the golden age, from the 30s and 40s.
It's the room. They don't have the room because especially Warner is every part of their lot is booked up with famous TV shows, from Ellen to Conan O'Brien. So yeah, it's I'm fulfilling a niche. This isn't just for the sci-fi fans. We have to be fill the needs of what the studios want as well, and it works perfectly for us. So yeah,
that sounds fantastic. So you mentioned the Hall of Cars. You mentioned the theater. Can you walk me through what you've envisioned? I've seen some of the concept art, but tell me, regardless of which location it would be, what are the key features of the museum going to be?
Well, I'll tell you what we want this to be for 2015. When you walk in to the lobby, there will be Bender from Futurama attacking the fans. Verbally, caustically attacking them and trying to work as a barker as well. Like you, when you go to Disneyland, there's Mr. Potato Head in front of the Toy Story thing.
Mm-hmm.
That was my inspiration for this because it would, hey, come on, have you caught it? But the difference is with our Bender will be, and I talked to this with Grant O'Hara about this, if this was possible. And he said, yeah, it's totally possible. Have sensors in him where he can recognize colors on a shirt, or if someone's wearing a Mickey Mouse shirt, or someone's wearing a Bender, or holds up something to his face, and he'll look down and he'll say what that is and make some snide remark.
Now, would he be on a screen, or would he be
a
full
3D
statue?
Yeah, no, he'd be an animatronic character standing there, 6 feet or however big Bender is in human terms. Yeah, no, I've already reached out to Groening. I can't remember his first name.
Matt
Groening, and the creators of Futurama. And we'll see if we can work it out. And of course, Fox. But that's something that would be really cool. And Lord knows Bender's not being utilized right now. So
right.
I think to be put in a learning situation, I think would just tickle these people pink. And also, the voice of Bender,
John DiMaggio.
John, yes. I always want to make sure I don't say Joe DiMaggio.
I know.
John DiMaggio, who is a hell of a nice guy, sat in our captain's chair last year at Comic-Con and signed autographs. So he already knows about it. And yeah, that would be perfect. So you walk in, to the right is our spaceship restaurant, and to the left would be the gift shop, which would have everything from toys to DVDs to shirts to Blu-rays to everything else from the shows that you would be seeing the franchises of inside the museum. So the studios would get their cut from that. So it wouldn't just be, okay, we're just going to be benevolent. No, you're also going to get money, guys. So, you know.
The spaceship restaurant, the one picture I keep getting in my head is the Quark's Bar that used to be in the Hilton. Mm-hmm. What are you envisioning for the restaurant?
We can't do Quark's. We could easily do Quark's because we got the blueprints. And a lot of the designers who made it are either friends of ours or on our board of directors. But, again, legally, we can't do that. So what we can do is create a 1950s Vision of the Future themed restaurant where you are transported in to this restaurant and you are on a spaceship flying through space, and it's like a 1950s Vision of the Future. It will be so cool. The ceiling, the portholes and the walls, you'll see planets flying by. You'll be attacked by aliens. As you know, there will be effects, and there'll be alien either animatronics or on screen. Believe me, this thing is going to be one of the coolest things ever, and there's nothing like it in the world. And it's very easy to do. It's as easy to do. It costs a little more money, but still, it's not that much harder than doing a boring, stupid restaurant. So I figured, let's do something that's one of the coolest. People who, regardless of whether they go to our museum, they still want to go to this restaurant. That's our vision. We'll have Tim Earls, who's on our board, is the designer of – he created Firefly. He did a lot for Babylon 5 and for Iron Man and a lot of stuff. He's helping me with this. And, you know, I'm conning Doug Drexler and Rick Sternbach into helping as well. that's going to be very awesome. And people are already on our Kickstarter, like they get to buy their buy a booth. They get to put their name on a plaque on the booth, and for the rest of their life, they get free drinks.
Oh, that's great!
Or their table, a table at the restaurant. So yeah, there's a lot of fun, cool stuff like that.
And so now we pass the restaurant. What is the first permanent exhibit we'll see?
No, that's it. You know, then you get out, you leave.
So you're opening a restaurant. That's what you're doing.
We're opening a restaurant. That's what this whole thing.
Why didn't you? You could have said that 25 minutes ago.
It's a franchise. No, so we're gonna have our Enterprise D, obviously, because that's Disneyland was all started with a mouse. Ours was all started with an Enterprise D bridge from Next Generation.
It's bigger than a mouse, so you've already had.
It depends on the mouse. That's going to be there. It's going to be complete and all-encompassing. It's going to be an entire bridge, and it will just knock people's socks off. We're going to have the original series bridge as well that you will go into the holodeck, and no bloody A, B, C, or D, and there will be the original series bridge. And then we will also have the NX-01 bridge, I think, in 2015. If not, we'll probably do it in 2016. Depends on how much room we got. Mm-hmm. There will be a Firefly room, which will be the cockpit Firefly.
Will that have both levels? Because that had those stairs that went down.
Yeah. It will not be both levels. Okay. Because the stairs that go down – you can't have that many people killing themselves going down the ladders, you know, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But you will have the cockpit. You will have I'm not going to say who's going to be at the Firefly Day, but I will say this, that I met Summer Glau 10 years ago, just before she did Firefly, and I've talked to Adam Baldwin, and I've talked to Alan Tudyk, I think you pronounce his name. Mm-hmm. And Jane Espenson has a thing on our Kickstarter, dinner, drinks with Jane. If that tells you anything about our, Firefly connection. So yeah, it's going to be an awesome time I had by all for that. And of course, Universal has a lot of Serenity props. So including the mule, which
oh wow,
ironically, Timothy Earls designed. It's very incestuous. So there'll be that. There'll be the Hall of Robots, which will be smaller, and it'll be incorporated with the Hall of Real Robots, which will be NASA's rover, probably ASIMO, Robonaut 2, which is also NASA's robot that they got up in the space station. Up in space, you know, they got a space station. Yeah, it's a humanoid robot that is just so awesome and brilliant. You can see a little of it in our video. There will be a Battlestar Galactica room because we're doing the rooms of the things that we know we already either have or have access to. Mm-hmm. These things we can do. Star Wars, I know we've got a few props that fans have offered us, but I don't know if we'll have enough for an entire room for our 2015 opening. And also we have to deal with Lucasfilms and with Disney. So my biggest concern of all this, A, getting the money, and B, not pissing anyone off. I want the studios to be happy with this. I want them to see this as a non-threat. I want them to see this as something that actually helps people and people can learn from. So,
and how has that process been going? Because I know you've been talking to them ongoing. How are they seeing it now? Are you having to convince them that you're not a threat, or are they on board?
Well, Universal's been the easiest. Universal has been just great and lovely about it. They basically said, you open those doors and give us a call. I've already seen a lot of what they – but with them, they kept everything. Paramount threw out a lot. And
right, and auctioned a lot off, which is how you have some of what you have.
Exactly. But Warner doesn't do that. Warner keeps a lot. Sony keeps some. We can't really get into those discussions until we have the space, because that's the main question for them. Where is this going to be? How much space is it? What do you need? What do you want? And you have the museum credentials and all that. So, but again, we're offering something that no other museum can offer, which is teaching science fiction, teaching real science through science fiction, mm-hmm. space and science through sci-fi, and also giving them a space to sell their wares in our gift shop.
Museum credentials is interesting. How is that process going? Because that sounds like a lot of government forms.
It's not as hard as you'd think, because we already have our 501c3.
Which is?
It's our nonprofit thing with the IRS. That we got in less than 2 months.
Really?
So somebody up there likes us a lot. And yeah, that and the California board. But there's still other things that just take time, but they cost money. We can't do those without the money, without hopefully this Kickstarter. I would have thought it would just be a given, but there's certain articles that have not yet come out, and there's certain actors that have not yet tweeted about us. So until that happens, just it's tough to get out there. It's tough to meet our goal, because our goal is $83,000, which is the culmination of all the things that we need so we can move on to the next step, which is approaching the studios heavy-handed, approaching the government grants, all the other grants, all the other Microsoft, Google, Bank of America, you name it, you know, going and asking them legitimately for the money that we need, and having all these materials that we need, which a lot of it we can't get for free.
Right.
We've gotten a lot for free. We've done a lot with what we've got so far with the concept art and some of the budget and a prospectus. That's more than a lot of people have. We just need a lot more, and people to burn up the phones and the emails who are experts at doing that kind of stuff, which we're not.
Right, and it seems like Kickstarter now, that it's gotten so popular, it's hard to break through the clutter the same way it was with YouTube, say, 6-7 years ago. You could put up a video, and 50,000 people would probably see it. Now, today, you're lucky if you get 50. It's really up to you to drive to that Kickstarter.
Well, we've been very fortunate in getting a lot of action on as far as press. Like the first 2 days, we got 30 articles about us. And not just you know, blog sites, but like, my God, CBS, NBC did a story about us, sci-fi. I was floored by that. And it's the same with back in 2012, all this stuff happened, and I almost had a stroke because I had no clue that this was going to become as popular as it did. I was a bit more prepared this time, but it's still getting the word out, having big stars have the time and the audacity to say, hey, people, you know, look, this needs to happen. I've approached ones, Carl Urban, Billy Piper, a lot of people from different genres saying, hey, help me. Bill Shatner, I've asked and begged and pleaded. No, Bill's a great, wonderful guy. And, you know, the same with the Star Trek cast. It's just like Will Wheaton, he refuses to tweet about any Kickstarter because everybody asking him to do his Kickstarter.
Yeah.
It's nothing personal. It's just, it has to be one size fits all. Right, exactly. And he can't say no to one person and say yes to another. And, you know. So, yeah, just this morning I asked a Star Trek actor to tweet about us, and hopefully he'll do it. And I said, look, if you don't, I understand, but we could really use the help. And he's got over a million, you know. Bruce Campbell's been awesome. A lot of people. I'm still hitting on Weird Al Yankovic, who sat in our chair, to tweet about us. So we'll see. You know, it's whatever happens, happens. Whether the Kickstarter's a total success or not, that's not the end of us. It will just be a setback, and we can't get things done as quickly as we'd hoped. But, you know.
Right. It sounds like things are in such motion that you'll find another way.
Yeah, well, we're trying, yeah.
Well, but hopefully you won't have to.
Yeah, yeah.
So what are you looking forward to most when it's all done, when the museum is open and you get to walk through it? What do you keep envisioning in your mind?
Well, the 2015 will be our starting ground. That will be to, A, prove that teaching real science through sci-fi works, B, that we can sustain a momentum of sci-fi fans, which I know we can. I mean, let's be honest. What sci-fi fan isn't going to want to go to this? Cosplay is totally allowed in our museum.
That's a good idea.
Oh, well, it's a given to me.
Then it's like having a convention every day.
Yeah, every girl and a lot of guys I know would. They'd never speak to me if cosplay wasn't allowed.
I like how so many of your policies are you afraid of people getting mad at you.
Yeah, that's totally it. Well, it's also what I think is cool and what ticks me off at other museums or other, you know, theme parks. You're not allowed to do this. You're not allowed to do that. Well, okay, you can't – we won't have Streaker Day or anything, but I mean everything else is pretty much, you know – cool. This is a museum I would want, and every geek, nerd, sci-fi, cosplayer, star, whatever, wants the same thing. They all just, oh my God, I never thought of that. I never thought that was possible. Yeah, it's possible. Of course, people just don't do it for whatever reason, but it's totally doable. Fear is my motivator, but no, it's not fear. It's actually the coolness factor of it is my motivator and what I would want to see in this. So yeah, the 2015 is our proving ground. It's also a proving ground to all the big investors who would see the potential in this for our bigger museum. And it'll take a few years to get that bigger museum, probably to get the money and everything else. So this will be like a preview museum in action and still stay open and still, regardless of the size of it, it'll still be one of the coolest things in Hollywood. Let's be honest. I mean, it'll have all the stuff that people will want to go to.
That's great. Now, how have the conventions helped you out? Because I see you guys have been everywhere in the last couple of years.
Yeah. 23 or 4 cons we've been to.
Wow.
The last one was the Salt Lake City convention. And that was the one that Mr. William Shatner and most of the Next Generation cast sat in our chairs on our bridge. And oh my Lord, that was just like a dream come true to me. So yeah, that was a big, big deal. So yeah, that said, it's the fans are amazing that we meet, the stories that I could tell, the touching moments of people driving from God knows where to come and sit in our captain's chair or whatever. That's just incredible to me. It's so touching. And yeah, we don't make a ton of money at those things. People give what they can. We don't ask for any money. If they want to give, they can, but it's not like a charge to sit in the chair. If they're able to donate, great. But it's not really about that. It's about the goodwill, and it's about making a special moment for people who won't be able to come to our Hollywood Museum, you know. That's a big deal to me. And we're going to continue doing that until, you know, people just say, okay, enough already. Get out. We don't want you here anymore. Pooey. You know. So, yeah.
I don't know if that'll ever happen. I keep seeing the Batmobile.
Yeah, I would love to have to put our Firefly cockpit on the road. That would be pretty awesome, too.
That would be.
But we'll see. We'll see what happens. You know, we can't do it as much as we have been because you spend your time doing that. You can't spend your time at home doing the business you got to do. So this year we're going to do a lot less cons, and we're going to concentrate on the business aspect of this, which is what we've been doing. And it's a lot harder to do than calling up a convention and saying, hey, you want us to bring our bridge? Oh, yeah, sure. You know, that's easy because the cons are already going and substantial. We'll probably be doing the San Diego Comic-Con. We'll probably be doing a con in Kentucky and one in Canada. And we're not doing the Vegas one for the simple reason of the deal that we had worked out with Creation. It didn't work out because it was conflicting with CBS's traveling exhibit.
Oh, interesting.
It didn't even occur to me that that would be the case. You know, that was the last thing from my mind. But they said, you guys can come, you know, if you pay your own way. Well, can't do that, you know. So it just – because we're not official, they can't promote us. If that makes any sense.
Yeah, you're the kind of thing that you stumble on the floor of the con.
Yeah. Trip over. Ooh, whoa. But I'll tell you this, that Star Trek convention in Vegas is the one convention we don't have to explain ourselves. They already know who we are.
They already know what that chair is.
Yeah. Yeah. But
at other cons are people just trying to sit down and take off their shoes.
Yeah, right, exactly. What the hell is this thing? What is this? Is Captain Kirk's thing? You know, like that. No, I'm from the South, so I can do that accent without people thinking I'm making fun. Yeah, it was a sad thing. I would have loved to have gone to the Vegas thing, but honestly, we're coming straight from Comic-Con in San Diego to that, and that would have been a killer.
Yeah, this is prime convention season.
Yeah, but the Vegas one, that breaks my heart, mainly because there was a couple who was going to get married on our bridge.
Aww.
And that it didn't work out. It's just heartbreaking to me. But I told them once we get our museum open, they're going to get married again on our full bridge.
Yeah. For a second, I thought you said, don't get married until I open my museum.
Yeah, right. Yeah, talk about the audacity of that. No, they're
My Kickstarter will prove your life.
Yeah, no, I love those people. They are so sweet, and it just I was more upset about that than I was about just, you know, photo ops.
Right.
But, you know, c'est la vie. It's we can't prove a precedent. You know, that's not where we're at. And I'm not trying to. I just want to give the fans what they want, and I want to do what I want, which is to, again, drive the educational aspect of this and teach real space, NASA space through this thing, which nobody else is doing.
Right. Yeah, that's one of the reasons I've fallen in love with Cosmos on Fox now.
Isn't that great?
It's so good.
Yeah.
It's so good. It depresses me greatly about climate change, but then by the end of it, I'm like, maybe the planet doesn't need humans.
Yeah, but then again, Pat Sajak, you know.
Well, Pat Sajak knows every letter in the alphabet, so we need to listen to Pat Sajak.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. I'd prefer to listen to Vanna, personally.
She doesn't say that much.
No, not anymore.
A lot more waving than talking.
Yeah, I met her once, actually. Very sweet, sweet girl. I never met him. But anyway, no, that show was produced by Seth MacFarlane and Brennan Braga.
Yeah, yeah, and I noticed Brennan Braga's first episode was very Star Trek heavy. Patrick Stewart did a voice in one of the animations.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, it was his first episode. I'm trying to remember who it was. It was one of those episodes that focused on an early astronomer. And I wish I could remember which one it was. It was like the second or third, but I picked his voice out right away, and then I realized, oh, this is a Brennan Braga one.
Mm. Yeah, and again, anything that gets it out there that teaches real science and makes it fun, teaches anything and makes it fun.
Yeah.
I mean, you go to, like, our museum, if you're a fan, whatever you're a fan of, whatever franchise, genre, whatever – there should be something for everyone, and I that's what I want, a museum that has something for everyone and doesn't just pigeonhole you into, okay, you're this age, so you're supposed to be this level of math and science. Okay, what if you're lousy at math? I was lousy at math, lousy at science. I was horrible at those. If there had been this museum when I was a kid, I probably would have cared enough to learn more and, you know, not be lousy.
Yeah, I always said I was good at science until it became math.
Mm,
and I never saw that coming because it was 6 years of, how does the Earth move? Well, it moves in a circle. Oh, that's great.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a particular type of brain that you need. It's the same with acting or writing or directing or producing or drawing or whatever. It's not one size fits all, and neither will this museum be.
Right. Well, we've been talking all about the Kickstarter. How can we find the Kickstarter for the museum?
You can go to chase.com or go to Google and type in Hollywood Science Fiction Museum or Hollywood Sci-Fi Museum. Any of those will take you to our Kickstarter. It's harder to not find it. It'll tick people off, you know, by seeing it so much. Yeah.
Ordinarily, I would edit this out, but that is the one time that Skype broke up. You said go to We've been talking for 45 minutes about the museum, and Skype won't let you tell us.
Okay, should I start again?
Please, please do, yes.
My name is Houston Huddleston.
And you can go to Google or Yahoo or anything you want, type in Hollywood Sci-Fi, S-C-I-F-I, or Hollywood Science Fiction Museum, Hollywood Sci-Fi Museum. Any of those will take you to our Kickstarter. Or type in HollywoodSciFi.com. Or .org, you know, you're going to be so sick of seeing us. Whatever you try to type in, you'll be able to trip over and find our Kickstarter. That's how easy it is. Or go to Kickstarter and type in museum or Hollywood Sci-Fi or type in the coolest museum ever, and we'll probably show up as well.
That and the Doctor Who experience in Wales.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's the other one. That's the other cool. The coolest museum in the United States? How's that? Is that
okay? I'm okay with that.
Okay.
Yeah, I worked at the Museum of Television Radio for about a year, and I'm already saying yours is cooler.
Well, I hope it will be. The Doctor Who, that's another big thing. I've already got a few props from that. We definitely are going to have a TARDIS.
Ah, that's wonderful.
When you walk into that and the TARDIS console and yeah, we've got some really cool ideas for. Did you see our Rory? We're gonna have a Sylvester McCoy one soon. Video, the Rory video with Colin Baker. Did you see that?
No, I didn't.
It's on our it's on our Kickstarter. It's also on our Facebook. It's pretty neat. It's they both were just what's his name? Rory. Arthur Darvill.
Yes.
I said, what's your favorite room in our Hollywood Sci-Fi Museum? He said, Hall of Cars, actually. That's the one. I'm a big petrol fan. I said, all right, well, that's great. And I asked him, I said, would Rory and Amy want to go to our museum? And he said, they would love going to the museum. I can't imagine anyone not wanting to go to your museum. And then Colin Baker, who played the Sixth Doctor, also said some just glowing, amazing things. So, Fifth Doctor? No, he was six.
He was six. Yeah. You were right. Yeah.
As I meet these people, Billie Piper told me that I wish I'd gotten it on film. She told me that she wanted to bring her child to the thing. And she said, seriously, invite me to the premiere of this. I said, I will. Yeah, you got it, lady.
Now, the most important thing, when does the Kickstarter end?
It ends in 19 days.
Okay, that is 19 days from recording. So the date
is the 15th of June.
Okay, so you have until the 15th of June.
Yeah, so we still need some bread. We still need some major bread. But, you know, God willing, fingers crossed, Buddha willing, whatever, you know, we will do this. And even if, you know, this isn't, if the Kickstarter for whatever went down the commode, that wouldn't be the end of this. There's too much going for it. It would just be a lot easier if it did, and it would happen a lot sooner.
Yeah, so why don't we do that? Let's just make it easy and soon.
Yes. Why not?
I like that idea.
Why not? Please, help
nothing, me. Nothing is easy and soon. This should be easy and soon.
Yeah. No, we know what we're going to do once we have the money. It's not, okay, now that we – no, we got it all budgeted out. We're going to burn up the phones. The next thing we do is start our plan of action of who to contact, where to contact, how to contact, what to tell all of these big people with money, all of these big franchises, companies, grants, you name it, and say, look, here's what we're doing. Are you in or out? Okay, if you're out, well, we're going to keep bugging you till you're in. So,
well, I wish you all the best of luck. This place sounds awesome.
Thank you.
I think you should put hotel rooms in there, and I think I should live in one.
Well, that, coincidentally, that's our 2018-2019 plan.
How about a podcast studio? Then I would never have to leave.
You know, it's,
oh, I love that idea because you have celebrities coming anyway.
Yeah. You know, we actually should have a studio because we're going to do our own thing that is like going to – we're already doing this, going to different stars and saying, hey, what do you think about our museum? What would be your favorite room and all that stuff? Because we don't want to compete with like what you guys do. But I mean, I want to have something that is exclusively to our museum and – okay. You know, forget about us. What about us? So yeah, that would be cool. I think that there should be something that relates to Hollywood.
And yeah, I think we just put a microphone in your TARDIS console, and then I'll just come and talk into the TARDIS, and I probably won't even record it. I'll just sit there and talk.
Yeah, I'm open. You know, I'm open to whatever works. There's so many opportunities and options to this. And I want it to be what we want it to be, which is as cool and informative and inspirational as humanly possible.
As always, you can follow me at Not In My Book on Twitter, like the Caffeinated Comics page on Facebook, and you can visit Chimera's Comics and see Stephen Brown behind the register at 19 South Grange Road. We will talk to you next week.
Caffeinated Comics is a Not In My Book production.
Take that, meatball!